As was just mentioned, this is going to be our final lesson or session on the Lord's Day, and we will start a new series, Lord willing, next week. But to kind of introduce our topic, I want you to think about Paul's epistles. You know, he has a pattern that he often is known for, and it goes something like this. You can easily see it in the book of Romans, and you can actually see it quite clear in Ephesians. What Paul does when he opens up these epistles is he begins with a declaration of this is who God is. This is what God has done for you. And if we needed to say it succinctly, what Paul always begins with is the gospel. He's explaining the gospel. If you're looking in the book of Romans, yes, he's going to emphasize certain parts and aspects of the gospel, but for 11 chapters, he's going to spend time in and time out making it clear this is what the gospel is. This is how it works. He does the same thing in Ephesians 1 through 3. But what Paul does in Romans 12 and in Ephesians 4 is he has this moment, and it's one that you're very well aware of. It's this therefore moment. If this is what the gospel is and this is what the gospel does, therefore. It's answering a question that you and me and everyone else should be asking. If that is all true, the question that you should ask, the question that I have to ask is, well, then what do we do about it? How should I live? And so it's this therefore moment. The reason I'm sharing that with you is we're in the therefore moment. When we've been talking about the Lord's Day, we are at that moment in which we say, therefore. We have looked at its purpose, a framework all the way around. What is God saying? The purpose, the perspective, what's the shape of the Lord's Day? And we're coming to that moment where it's therefore. How ought we to think and how ought we to live for the Lord's Day? It's the therefore moment. I want to read, I don't typically do this, but I don't think I could say it better, to be honest with you. His name is Thomas Witherow. He was a pastor in the 1800s, which I want you to know that, because when you hear him, he's talking about his time period in the 1800s, and it sounds very much like today. And so it's never an outdated thought when we talk about the Word of God. But he pastored for 45 years in Northern Ireland. He's known for some of his teaching and his writings. And before you panic, I'm going to read a chapter. Now, just so you know, this chapter is less than one full page. And so you're going to be okay. But I want you to hear what he has to say. I'm going to read its title. I'll read the chapter and we will get started more on our topic. The title of his chapter, it's really a selected writing. So if you're looking for the book, it's called I Will Build My Church. He did not entitle this book. It's someone else who took writings of Thomas and put it together. And so that's why the chapter is less than a page. All right. And this is the title of this chapter, Nobody the Richer by the Abolition of the Sabbath. Nobody the Richer by the Abolition of the Sabbath. This is what he says. The good God has been kinder to man than man would be to himself. For every 6 days toil, the Almighty has granted us the privilege of one day's rest. When the whole community with one consent keeps the Sabbath, nobody loses and everybody gains by its observance. The laborer earns as much in 6 days as he would earn in seven. The trader sells as much in 6 days as he would in seven. No farm falls behind in its cultivation simply because the owner works only 6 days in the week. While for every 6 days toil, the workman everywhere enjoys one day of grateful rest. On the contrary, were the Lord's day to disappear entirely and throughout the whole community, the week to be turned into seven working days, a seventh would be added to the burden of human toil, and nobody would be the gainer. To turn the week into seven working days would produce the same effect as if one seventh more laborers than at present were to be thrown into the market. Wages would fall in proportion. This artisan would find that while one seventh was added to his work, his week's wages would exactly be the same as now. If every shop stood open 7 days, customers would take 7 days to buy what they now buy in six and would not consume the value of a sixpence more. And the manufacturer would find that one day's additional work every week could not possibly create a greater demand for his goods than what previously existed. When too late to be remedied, the discovery will be made that a precious gift of God has been flung away, and no compensation left behind. Kill if you choose the bird that lays the golden egg, but the only reward you will have for your covetousness is that the egg of gold will return to you no more. Banish out of the world the day of rest, which once a week God bestows upon humanity, and you will find when it is too late that the only thing you can put in its place is toil without rest. Toil without rest. Repeated and repeated, on and on to the latest generation. Sounds like you could have written it yesterday and how we think, but you can hear what he's saying. There is no gain by saying, let's just not come to church. It's imprisonment. It's enslavement. It doesn't benefit you in any way. In fact, actually, he's going to go on to say in another part of his writings that when you or me or even the world, when we determine that Sunday is just an extra day for personal pleasure, however I want to do it, what he's saying is that's just a roundabout way of making it another day of work, because you have to work against how God has made you and how God has made creation to try to satisfy something by which God has said, that's not what I've designed you for. And even furthermore, this is where I think he really drives home his point. He says, if I were to ask you, is keeping the Sabbath a good thing? Everyone would say yes, according to him. And he would say, if breaking the Sabbath is a bad thing or an evil thing, what would you say? And everyone would say, yes. He says, but we have failed to understand that principle when it comes to our personal lives, because we make excuses for why not to keep it. We say to ourselves, well, I'm just one person, so it's not a big deal if I don't come. And he says, you have no right to think that way, because if you think that way, so can everyone else. And what happens if everyone else thinks the way that you think? You have an abolition of the Sabbath. And so he's saying there is a precious privilege that the Sabbath, the Lord's Day, offers, and the rewards of responsibility come with it. And so what I want to do is to talk about this therefore moment. As God has set forth the Lord's Day every week, how do we understand biblically what are appropriate practices? And I recognize some of you might want me to be very detailed. I won't be as detailed as some of you want, and perhaps I'm more detailed than some of you want. And so I want to begin with looking at a couple of principles. And the reason why I want to lay hold of some principles is because it is a good desire. If you've been asking this question, so what does that mean? How do I appropriately live on the Lord's Day? That is a good thing. But if you've moved to this place of, I need the list of what that means, that's not a good thing. In fact, actually, I said something similar to the men last night at the men's event. There's a good reason that God rarely gives you an exhaustive list of things in His Word, because you and I in our own hearts are tempted to check every box He gives us. And that's how we can satisfy our own legalistic way of living. Look at all of what I've done. And so He rarely gives you an exhaustive list. What does He give you? Principles. He gives you principles that say, now wrestle with this and let's look at the application. And so what we want to do is look at principles. We don't want to create an exhaustive list, because that leads us to where we were a few weeks ago. That's a pharisaical way of fencing the law of God so that we do not break it. I am not saying to you that you should not have some personal application. You absolutely should. But your personal application might be very different than someone else's. But the principles aren't up for discussion. God lays out principles, and you can't say, well, I don't agree. That's where the Word of God is saying, no, this is what is true. How you go about applying a principle very well could look different. I was talking to one of your children earlier. It was last Sunday, if I remember correctly, and they were asking a question. I don't know if they were thinking of me when they're asking it. I have no idea. But the question that they asked was simply, they asked it this way, to be very specific. They said, is God more pleased if you lift your hands higher or lower? And I thought, I've never been asked that question before. And so I was trying to wrestle with, what is it that you're really asking? And so they said, well, does He like it more if your hands are higher or lower? And I initially thought, maybe you're thinking about a different part of the service. So I said, well, if you're talking about your pastors, their hands look different at different parts. A prayer of invocation, the hands go up like this. Why? Because you're asking God to come down and do something. But a benediction, the hands go out. Why? Because now you're pronouncing a blessing upon the people of God. That's not really what the child was asking after I gave him that good answer. They wanted to know which one was better. And I said, you know, I don't think God's going to tell you that answer because he's not concerned how high or low your hands are. He's concerned about what's going on in your heart. Your hands will do what they do based on what's going on in your heart. That's really what the Bible is saying about the Lord's Day. You don't need me to tell you every little thing to do. What you need is to look at your heart, because that is what the Lord is looking at. So let's look at two principles. We're going to camp out in Isaiah 58. We've already been there. These principles we're just bringing back to light, and then I'm going to try to spend more time on kind of what do those practices look like. Isaiah chapter 58, we looked at this, I don't actually don't know how many weeks ago. It was the first week, if I recall it correctly. It's teaching us a framework, a perspective on the Lord's Day. What's one principle that we can bring out from Isaiah chapter 58? When we speak of the Lord's Day, and if you're using the catechism question and it's talking about the freeing yourself from worldly recreations and worldly employments, he's not, the catechism's not saying this, nor is the scripture saying this. You should not be in this position where you're going to yourself, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. This is not a do and don't do. He's offering to you a principle. What is the Lord's Day meant to look like? Isaiah 58 is trying to make it abundantly clear. Principle number one, you think about this day as a day of delight. Now, the issue is, it's not a delight in your desires, it's a delighting in the Lord and His desires. And so when you're trying to wrestle with, well, what can I do? That's how you figure it out. What does God delight in? And how has He made this day for me to delight in Him on this day? If you can answer that question, God delights in this, then you should say, this is a good thing for the Lord's Day. But if you're wrestling with, well, this seems a lot more like this is my personal desire, I really want this to be about me, well, that's not necessarily a good thing, because that's not what it means to delight in the Lord on the Lord's Day. We want to experience such a delight because that's how God made you, and that's how He made this day. And so principle number one, it's not shocking. You're asking the question of delight. How does God delight? Does He delight in this, or does He not? Is this a delightful thing to the Lord? The second principle is more honing in, and you can see it in Isaiah 58 as well. If you're trying to follow along in Isaiah 58, I'm really kind of concentrating at the very end. And so you can look from 11 to 14. The second principle that you can find, he's honing in on the worldly employment and recreation. The reason why that is challenging, and the reason why we're often challenged, is because we want to say those are applications, but it's not an application. Isaiah is not applying. He's giving you a principle. He's saying the principle is not your way, not your words, not your wants. Those are principles. That is not the direct, what are those wants? What are those ways? What are those words? You and I have to work some of those out. And so, yes, is it clear in some ways that you can say, are there activities that make it increasingly difficult to be a part of the Lord's Day and to delight in it? Sure. A simple one. If you can't get to church, that would be one. If you're missing church due to some personal activity, personal delight, you have to go ahead and say, that's not the delight of the Lord. There are providential reasons, right? If people are sick or something like that, I'm not talking about that. But your personal recreational habits, it's not going to leave room for that, because that is not a delight of God. That is a delight of self. And so that's part of what he's getting at. Here are the principles. you still have to work out those applications. And the reason why I'm saying those are the principles is because we can all agree to that principle, and yet we can have very different applications. You and me might be very different on how that works. Some of you might say, you know, my family is really outdoorsy. And so what we do is we love to come to Sunday school. We love to come to morning worship. And then we just like to go to the park in the afternoon before evening worship. It's refreshing. We love the walk. We have great conversation. That's wonderful. But some of you go, that's utterly distracting because I'm people watching and I'm not doing anything but making fun of those who can't swing a bat in a park. That might be you. You can't go to the park then on Sunday. But some of you can. But you can still agree to the principle, can't you? The principle is still, how do we delight in the Lord? It might look different specifically in some of those times, but you can still agree with the same exact principle. And so what we're trying to do is say, let's look at the Word, and how does the Word illustrate principle and give to us conviction of application? What promotes delighting in God? So I'm going to try to go through some practices, generally speaking, and you can work some of them out. And I hope to do that for the remainder of our time. Excuse me. Number one, for the first practice, you don't have to write all these down because it's not an exhaustive list. Number one, I want you to practice in being refreshed. It's a preparation to being refreshed. And you heard me correctly. I want you to prepare yourself to enjoy the Lord's day. Not show up to church hoping for the best. No, you're preparing for the best. That's how you ought to think about the Lord's day. How do I prepare myself to enjoy its fullness and its height of blessing? One way, and hear me right, I understand that there are providential hindrances, so don't just let your feelings get hurt because I say some things directly to you. One way that you are not prepared to be refreshed is when you rush to church. You aren't prepared. You know who else isn't prepared? Your children. And you know that, right? Because when they come into the sanctuary sweating from running around, none of them are ready to go. Let's just sit and be quiet now, right? It's hard. And I'm not picking on anyone there. I'm saying you recognize rushing around doesn't help your mind, doesn't help your heart, doesn't help your affections. Slow down to prepare. There's something that we need to do to prepare ourselves in how to be refreshed. You cannot say to yourself, well, that's the point of a prelude. The prelude's not long enough, okay? It is wonderful, okay? And please get in there early enough and grab a seat and listen to it. The prelude is not a preparation enough for worship. We need to do a few more things. How could we do that? Well, I think if you have children, there are honest answers to this, aren't there? How many Sunday mornings where you are thinking to yourself, wrong shoes, holes in socks, clothes are wrinkled, they don't even match. And look at that dude's hair, right? That is a weekly occurrence for some. And you're thinking to yourself, how the heck do we prepare for it? One of the things that my wife has done very helpfully, because I'm one of those people who don't pay attention to the colors. I just put it out and think, well, most of them aren't wrinkled. And I'm typically wrong on that. But what she does to really help, she gets their clothes out the night before. So that the only thing we got to figure out how to do is put the arms through the holes and the legs. It's that simple. And I do the same for myself. I get my clothes out Saturday night. So there's no question in my mind, what am I having to do Sunday morning? I know how to prepare myself. Now, kids can be challenging, so there might be some reasons why it's hard to get to church on time. I understand that. But putting on an outfit shouldn't be one. There are ways in which we can prepare ourselves to be refreshed. The one that's probably a little bit more pointed to the heart, there are ways that you can prepare to be refreshed too. Staying out till midnight or 1 to 2 in the morning for a sport is not going to do it. Now, you might be one of those people who only sleep 6 hours and you're fine. I'm not going to judge you on that. But some of you need more than that. I need more than that. And so being out late and saying, well, you know, it was a long night, I think I can miss church, that's not delighting in the Lord. You need to prepare. And as much as that might be pushing on you, I want to show you, you already agree with that principle. If I were to put that illustration in a bit of a different way, how would you think about it? If you've got a game coming up, you're going to go to a playoff game, or you're going to go to a football game, or you're going to go to a concert. You pick the venue. I don't care what it is. How do you think about it? Did you already think, well, I might need to bring clothes to work because I need to be able to change to get there on time? I need to be thinking, am I going to eat before? Am I going to eat there? Do I need a babysitter? Are there some house chores that I need to do? What about work? Do I need to get more work done so I don't have to worry about it? How am I going to get there? All these questions you're wrestling with over and over until the day of the event. What are you doing? You are preparing to enjoy the event. I'm not telling you you shouldn't prepare to enjoy the event. What I am saying, if you put so much preparation for recreation, don't you have more reason for the one who made you and has called you to delight in him? If we can prepare to have fun, we can prepare to be refreshed. It gives us a freedom to say yes and to say no to things. Prepare yourself and your family for refreshment. I want you to practice refreshment, not just prepare. I want you to practice. How do you practice refreshment on the Lord's Day? Part of the reason why I think the Lord's Day creates a host of controversy is because we have either missing or misplaced priorities about the day. And so we don't prepare and we're not ready to practice of what it means to be refreshed. How do I know that? Because there are things in your life and in mine in which you have made every practice possible to enjoy it. I want you, looking around, this is true of most, not all, but I'm sure you could follow the illustration. I want you to go back to when you were dating your spouse or even engaged. Maybe you're dating and you know that you're going to marry this person, or you're engaged. There are questions that you're wrestling with. And yes, the bride might be thinking about what she's wearing and everything else, but there are life questions that you're wrestling. Where are we going to live? How are we going to afford it? And so you're saying to yourself, I've got to start saving some money. What things are you willing to do to save money to get married? What kind of ways are you willing to stop spending money? Or what kind of hours are you willing to put in at work or to do side jobs so that you can get married? Some of you, don't answer out loud in case you give the wrong answer to your spouse, but most of you are ready to go, I'll do anything. I love this person. I am so ready. I'll do whatever it takes because I want to be with this person. It's the same practice for the Lord. What are you willing to do to say, I'll do whatever it takes to be with him? I will prepare and I will come in ready because I delight in the Lord. None of you would say, man, it was a big burden to get married. I'm kind of second guessing it. You shouldn't say that about the Lord either. This day is never to be a burden. Isaiah is saying it ought always to be a delight. We have misplaced priorities. Sometimes it's missing because we're not coming from a position or a practice of saying, does God delight in this? We're just asking, how do I find delight in it? What is it about how I feel? And God is saying, I've made you to delight in me, and I've given you a day to delight in me. Make every moment about it. Make every moment about it, because it is a day for your delight. In fact, you don't have to turn there. You can. I'll read the verse for you. Psalm 122, verse 1, presents a wonderful perspective and a wonderful truth on that. This is what he says. I was glad when they said to me, let us go into the house of the Lord. Can you say that as a truth for you on Sunday mornings? I am glad to go into the house of the Lord. I have been looking forward to these moments to being with God and to being with his people. If in your heart you're saying yes, then hear the challenge. Act like it. Act like it. Talk like it. Teach your kids about it. Make this day a delight. Make it your gladness of what you are looking forward to on your way to church. It is a delight, and we can make it as such by the way we live. This day, that is the Lord's Day, should bring some expectations to you, and it should bring some anticipations to you. You should be waking up every Lord's Day with expectations and anticipations. You ought to expect every single Lord's Day. You ought to expect it. When you come, I will meet with God this day. And you're anticipating what it's going to be like. Maybe you read the worship guide ahead of time. Maybe you had your own devotional this morning. Maybe you just had a simple prayer. Maybe you listened to a song. I'm not as concerned about exactly what that activity was, but you ought to be expecting when you walk into this place, I'm going to meet with God, and I'm anticipating he's going to meet with me. Likewise, you ought to expect to meet with God together, and you ought to anticipate that. That I'm not coming. This is not a one-man show. This is not a me and God. I am here with the Lord and with his people. Children are an incredible encouragement in this area. They're going to challenge you first, because there's going to be those days, even my own kids will say it, do we really have to go to church today? I don't want to go to church today. Can't we do? Don't you see the encouragement there? Because you can come in and say, I hear what you're saying there. You're missing how God's made you. What you think is going to be life-giving is actually taking from you. You're not gaining anything, to quote Thomas, you're losing a great deal of things. This is what you were made for. You can encourage children in those answers. Not only that, don't you love what happens after Sunday school and before church? It can be stressful, I understand. But what do children do without your permission or without your direction? They're going to steam into this place. They're going to grab donuts and they're going to run out here and who knows what they're doing. But they're playing, aren't they? They can't wait to see their friends. They look forward to coming to church because they just want to see their friends. They instinctively know something is special about community, and I get it at church. Do you know how special it is to them? Have you ever heard your children say something like this? They come on a Sunday morning and they go, where's so-and-so? You know, I haven't seen so-and-so for a while either. Why are they not here very often? And you can see their disappointment. Some of them will go, well, when they're not here, then I can't do what I want to do. Hear me right. They have misplaced their own Sabbath priorities. They're children. But what they expect, you and I should expect. You should anticipate coming to here to see the people of God, such that when they're not here, it makes you a bit sad. I don't see them, and I need them. You ought to be able to come for the most part and say, gosh, I'm expecting to see, and run down the list. Because the principle is this day is a delight. And you are expecting and anticipating meeting with God with people. And you and I can enjoy what that means. We can delight in it. And we can know God together, such that there is a measure of aching in your heart when certain people that you expected, anticipated to see aren't here. Do you see the privilege? And yet, do you see the responsibility that you can enjoy, but you got to come? And everyone has to carry both. Everyone holds the privilege and the responsibility. Come to church with an expectation to meet God together and anticipate looking forward to seeing them. There's no community like the community of saints. I've shared stories with you, haven't I, about people who come to know Christ simply by seeing how God's people interact. It's the light of the world. They cannot explain that because there is no other community like it. I want you to practice by coming with expectation and anticipation. I also want you to think about a practice that says, come and stay. Pastor Joel does a great job at the very end of the morning service. He says something along these lines. He mixes it up so that you didn't get too bored of hearing the same thing, but something along this line of, hey, greet one another. This is not a movie theater. We don't think about church like, get there right before the previews, and as soon as the credits are out, I'm out. This is a come and stay. Come and enjoy. And in fact, I actually saw a study this week. Studies show that if you are that person who says, I come and cannot wait to meet with God's people, and I'll stay and hang out with them, do you know what the studies say? The studies say that you have deeper friendships at church and that you are more involved and serve at church because you know the needs and you know how to meet them. And so when you say, if you're saying in your own heart, I just feel like I'm not connecting and I don't know anybody, well, are you coming in and staying or are you coming and leaving? There's a two-way street there. We have a responsibility to reach out to you. You have a responsibility to stay. Some of people like to try to head out right before the benediction. We can't even say hello. Guys, y'all have seen me. Sometimes I leave before the benediction. I'm like, man, I can't even get out there fast enough. Come and stay. Enjoy God's people. You benefit. It's not just a service. You have greater relationship by coming. I want to help you understand another reason why you should practice a morning and evening attendance on the Lord's Day. What Sunday does, you ought to say, this is a blessing from God simply because its schedule doesn't change. Some of you have no idea what Monday morning is going to hold. Some of you have the rest of the year planned out. But most of you probably are still thinking, I'm really unsure of how this week's going to go. But you know what you can say? I am very certain how the Lord's Day is going to go. Doesn't matter if it's spring break, fall break, summer break, Christmas break, Thanksgiving break, storms, not storm. I mean, you just come up with whatever excuse. Do you know what happens on Sundays? We worship God at 11 o'clock. And we worship in the evenings at 5:30. It's a stress-free way to live. One day is always planned out for you. You never have to think about your schedule. And it makes it easy to say yes and no to things. Oh, sorry, I can't go. I've got church. And I can't wait to be there. It's a simple way to manage the stresses of life. But do you know what else morning and evening does for you? It's very, very practical, incredibly practical. You might be saying to yourself, I'm really struggling with certain sins. And what church does is it helps you recognize sin. And we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But one of the ways that church, coming to morning and evening, helps you in your fight of sin is it is a simple way to fight sin. If you come and your reason for coming is, I want to worship God, did you know that every moment that you are spending in the true worship of God, you're not sinning? You are fighting sin practically. When you come into the sanctuary and you are singing with your heart, with the affections that you love the Lord, you're hearing God's word come into your life and going, man, I really want to see some things change there. You are fighting sin. And it's a gift to you every week. Come to church and you can fight sin every week for at least 3 hours. You can go, I have no clue what I'm doing Monday through Saturday, but you've got a good plan to fight on Sundays. It's a simple way to practice putting the misdeeds of the flesh to death. There's another thing that Sundays do that makes Christian living better. I told you and I are clear that we are sinners. Sometimes, maybe you've thought this before, it's a fear. I'm not sure if I can come to church because you know what? Someone's going to confront me in my sin. And I just, man, I'm trying. And I just can't get it figured out. It's just a laundry list of things, and people keep letting me know. The sermons keep letting me know. I am a sinner. I'm not sure if you knew this, but yes, you are. And so am I. But do you know what church does? Church tells you you shouldn't be afraid of sin to come into church. What does Paul say in Romans chapter 8? If you are in Christ, therefore, there is now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. You don't need to be afraid of your sin. You don't need to try to hide it. You don't need to try to work its way out on your own. You come to church because Paul and God himself is saying, you're not going to be condemned in this place. You're going to be redeemed and restored in this place. And this is one of the only places, unless you were one of those strong-willed, you always have verses on your mind. When you are fighting sin and you find yourself in this downward spiral, I can't get out and woe is me and I'm just condemned. Church is the place that says you do have sin and Jesus is the answer. It gives you the gospel answer that you fail to give yourself. And you can have it every Lord's Day. You get a kind of an Isaiah 6 picture. You remember Isaiah 6? The holiness of God. It's when Isaiah has pronounced a curse on himself. He recognizes how sinful he is in the presence of God. And here comes an angel with a hot coal. And it sizzles his mouth, letting him know what? You are a sinner. And your sin has been atoned for. And Isaiah can respond with, well, then send me, Lord. I'm ready to fight. Because you are here to help. There is such a gospel privilege and blessing by coming to church as to say you get to hear the gospel as it weighs and as it bears on your sin. It teaches you how to worship, even in the midst of a fallen world. You don't wallow, you worship. You might be saying at this point, this sounds really good. This is really hard. And I think you might be nitpicking, Danny. I'm not nitpicking. I'm trying to give you the principles. The reason why you feel like it's hard, I'm actually okay that you feel that way. That's not a bad thing. If you have said, I've been here the last several weeks, it's not that I have disagreements, I'm just not sure I can do it. If that's where you are, then you are in a good place. Because sometimes I think there's a side of when we talk about church and we talk about the Lord's Day, it's the fourth commandment. It's not that hard. I could easily do it. You can kind of think of a rich young ruler here for a moment. Have you gone to church? Yep. All I needed to do was come in, check my name, and then I can check on out. You recognize when we have that kind of perspective on the fourth commandment, it's not that hard. You might even be saying, man, I do a really good job. Some of you might even be willing to go, I'm pretty perfect. You look at my record, I've not missed. I come. Should you really think about the Lord's Day that way? You know, if it's the fourth commandment and we're going to say that the Ten Commandments are the summary of God's law, are you ready and willing to say, I can fulfill perfectly 10% of God's entire law? The other nine are a little bit difficult, but man, you know that fourth one? I've got it. I can do that one. If you're willing to say that, you have not understood the Lord's Day. But if you're kind of feeling weight for a moment and going, I'm not sure, then you're in the right place. Do you know how you keep the Lord's Day? You depend on the Lord. Coming into worship is a coming in faith. I can't do all these things. I need help. I can't satisfy this commandment. I need the Lord's mercy to sustain me, to encourage me, to send me out, because I can't do it all on my own. And he will. Do you know why he will sustain you? Do you know why he will encourage you? Because you're tasting something of glory this day. This is what eternity looks like. You're expecting and anticipating to meet with God together. And so when you think about the Lord's Day, there are some applications that you all need to work out on your own. But there are some practices and principles that you don't need to work out on your own. We can do that together because this is a day of delight. May we never call it a burden, but prepare ourselves for what you have been longing for. For in Christ Jesus, he has made you to enjoy refreshment with him for all eternity. Let me stop there.